Just like high school football again, Friday Night Lights, the Hawks are going to take on Maryland out on the East Coast on Friday night. That's tomorrow, if you're listening to this on the day of release. It's not going to be an easy game. We're here to break that down. Had a lot of fun in this one, a lot of analysis as well. It's the Washed Up Walk-Ons, baby. Let's have a day. Let's go.
Welcome back, Washed Up Walk-Ons fans, episode 253 of the podcast. I am almost in tears right now laughing at the shenanigans that have been going over on patreon.com/washedupwalkons. Shameless plug, but the Tuesday morning extra that Kluver and I have been coming up with has been hot lava, and it's the content that you guys are looking for out here on the internet. I'm telling you guys, we've got some really good stuff over there on Patreon, so go check it out. We're playing Maryland this week, and I don't know anything about Maryland, so I hope these other two guys do. But that's what I got, man. Kluver.
Kev, you know anything about Maryland?
Yeah, it's on the East Coast.
It is on the East Coast. DC.
They have the ugliest.
And I heard they have crab cakes, right?
They got some.
Yes. They got some pretty good crab cakes over there.
I'm allergic, so.
Good crab cakes, horrible uniforms.
Uniforms aren't great. Odd color. They basically, if you mashed Iowa State and Iowa together, and you got this weird little, like, weird cousin, that's Maryland, basically.
Like a little inbred between those two.
It's a little, yeah, a little in the family. Maryland is what you come up with. And we're going to get to them in a second. In fact, Kevin and Drake don't even know this, but tech guy / CEO of this organization went ahead and got a little cross enemy lines reconnaissance like we did in week one. In week one, we talked to Scott Caulfield from Indiana. And he gave us a bunch of great insight on the Hoosiers. We took care of them. Hopefully we can do that this week. But somewhere in this podcast, I will input the conversation that I had with a Maryland senior who is a beat writer and head editor of their school newspaper. And he's trying to get into the game. And he offered up some good information personnel-wise on the Maryland Terrapins, the Turtles, as some would say. I like totals. So you'll hear that in a bit and he'll be able to tell you a little bit more. Kevin, what were you going to say?
I said terrapin. That's turtle.
Turtle. Is that Spanish for turtle? No, that's tortuga.
I don't know. Let's look it up.
Where do you get terrapin? Look that up for me. In the meantime, Drake mentioned the Patreon and we really don't want to sound selly, but we have a good, we do a bunch of funny shit over there. This week, Drake, I mean, this was one of five good parts of the podcast, but Drake was in a situation, a scenario where there was a potential murder on at play. And yeah, I get that it's a turtle, Kevin, but where does terrapin come from?
One of several small species of turtle living in fresh or brackish water.
Oh, okay. It's a species. Okay. So they're not even a big turtle. That's embarrassing. Drake almost killed someone at a gas stop in the middle of the desert. And if you want to hear that and you really want to pay us for extra content and donate to the kids, that's patreon.com/washedupwalkons. I was hit up by a listener, a fan of the show. And this week, he let me onto this thing that a nurse at the Children's Hospital just started. It's a GoFundMe. And I thought that this would be an awesome way for us to support specifically a cause at the hospital. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but if you would like to, it is GoFundMe.com and then just search Holidays and Hawkeyes Sleepers for the NICU. This girl's name is Liz. She works at the Children's Hospital. And every year they do something specific for them. This year they're going to do little, basically onesies She's got a little, a cute little picture here. They've got $2,700 raised so far. And I thought that, and I'm just throwing this out to you guys. If you guys, I put you on the spot now. If you tell me that this is a dumb idea, now you look like assholes. But I thought that all the Patreon signups, 100% of the Patreon signups from Thursday when this comes out to when this thing ends, which I think it's like 10 days or so, or maybe 5 days. All of our proceeds will go to a donation to that.
Yeah. Cutting it up. Sell it. Send
claps,
it.
Claps just for that.
Send it.
All right. So sleepers for the NICU. And honestly, if we were really on top of things, we'd get a little honeypot sleeper for them and they could wear little cute onesies with honeypot on it. Maybe next year. Cool. So if you want to sign up and support that, 100% of anybody's signups will go there. We've got a few things on the agenda here before we get to the Terrapins. I'm going to share my screen, and I don't know if the screen is big enough for these two or not. Oh, their heads do fit on the screen.
He's got jokes.
Barely. How freaking cool is this, dude? How amazing would this be to jersey swap with your brother in the NFL? We've got Nick Niemann and Ben Niemann on the screen for the listeners. I'm jealous.
That's the American dream right there, right?
Yeah, I talked to Ben about it, and I was like, dude, you played against your brother in the National Football League. And he's like, yeah, man, little bro beat my ass too.
Sure did. Chargers upset. I don't even know if it's an upset. Chargers are looking like one of the best teams in the league. Chiefs obviously have kind of.
Bro, how we were talking about how it's fade the city of New York?
Yeah.
It's all in on the city of Los Angeles.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. This is just one of the coolest things. You can go to Nick Niemann or Ben Neiman's social to see this. And there was speculation. Now, this picture doesn't make it look as bad. There was speculation from one picture that Nick has a bigger head than Ben.
Well, here's the thing is that Nick for sure has a bigger face.
Bigger face. Ben.
Bigger face.
But called him Face Niemann. Like, that was his nickname. Old boy has a face on him,
yeah,
but that's okay because he's got a nice smile. He's got a big face.
You have to do this in orthopedics too. You got to look at both planes. So you got to look at the front. You got to look at the side. You look at the side, and Ben's noggin. It's like,
if you do
how does that thing fit in a helmet?
Yeah. If you were to go into the science lab at the University of Iowa and do a water displacement test, and you just stuck their heads down in a thing of water, Ben would end up having more water coming out of that tub. And
if you look at Ben from a side profile, it's as big as a barn.
His head
is like the side of a barn.
We got like a Mr. Mackey thing going on.
You could park a damn truck in there, you know? Next on the agenda, Drake.
I'm so glad you brought this up, man.
Bro, I sent this to Kluver 2 days ago. Like, how are you doing this in the middle of the season?
For those that don't know or potentially interested, some of you may have eligibility out there. Arizona football, the Wildcats, who are god awful, they're bad, are having walk-on tryouts mid-season.
They are equally as dog shit as the city that they play in.
Okay.
Tucson, Arizona, absolute meth hellhole.
Wow.
And they play in the middle of, yeah.
Do you think any of the players are on meth and that's why they're not good at football?
They're playing about like they're a bunch of meth heads.
But imagine this from like you're the head coach perspective. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Like, well, these guys can't get it done. Let's see if anybody else out there knows how to run the
football. Anybody around Tucson that can throw some cleats on? Hey, can you run a slant route, Jimmy? You got a
like,
jersey.
Like you've seen this like a time or two, but it's like in the summer or in the spring or something like that, or come to a spring practice, not in the middle of the season. This is what they're devoting their time to is this.
Mm-hmm. Walk-on tryouts for those interested that may be in the Tucson area, Tuesday, October 12th, 2021 at 6 p.m. in Arizona Stadium. You might prefer to continue just being a normal person and not being a Division I athlete if this is the alternative.
What do you think the chances are that, say, one of us were to change our name legally, enroll in classes, Do you think like the NCAA would find out if that was in fact us?
I bet that you, if you really wanted to, you could slide it through. You would have to change your name because on the tryout thing, it says you have to be cleared with the eligibility center, which we all had to do at one point, like our senior year of high school. So I don't know. There might have to be, I don't think they made you like turn in your ID. Maybe they had your social security number. I don't know how they really verify that, but you could fake a social too. If you really wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's got fake identities out there that they fall back on, right?
Hell, Iowa supposedly was the fake identity of college football in 2015. According to Colin Cowherd. Kevin, we were tagged in this. I think you were as well. And someone said, this seems like something Kevin Ward would do.
All right. Oh, well, that's just an electric human being right there. Just enjoying a good win.
Now, this is what's playing on the screen. Could you guys hear that or
no? Well, am I reading that no. This is before the football game?
This is a man that plays for Georgia State. And they are on their way to the game.
Wow.
He's on top of the bus and someone tossed him a beer Cold Stone style and he chugged the entire thing as the bus drives away.
Did you just say Cold Stone instead of Stone Cold?
Cold Stone style.
Bro.
Hey, what did I say?
How drunk are you right now?
What did I say? Cold Stone.
He's the ice cream man. He's got ice cream on the line.
Stone Cold. Drake, what did I tell you? I'm the ice cream guy. In the Patreon yesterday, I told you. Stone Cold style. This guy chugs a beer on the way to a game on top of a moving bus. And someone said that reminded them of you, Kevin.
That would be
some serious shit.
You know, maybe after winning the national championship, sure, that's something I might do, but going to the game, I don't think I'd ever be welcome back in the facility again.
There's a good chance. This one
quit the game in the quit the team in the middle of the game and tweeted at him.
That's correct. This guy, Ohio State linebacker Kayvon Pope, apparently quits team, angry tweets in the middle of the game against Akron, in which they were blowing them out. Pope was attempting to come onto the field during a play and seemed to be waved off by captain and fellow linebacker Taraja Mitchell. That apparently did not sit well with Pope. He immediately became animated on the sidelines, had a heated exchange with a couple of the coaches, and then went into the locker room. Shortly after, he tweeted, I believe, fuck Ohio State. And another tweet said something like, good luck to my teammates this year. Just quit, middle of the game.
Reminds me of who was it in the NFL?
Oh, I thought you were saying Brandt.
He retired at halftime. Like it was like 2 years ago.
I don't know, but
I think it was some dude on the Jets just retired at halftime.
It's not good.
Just like, you know what? It's just not working anymore.
If there was ever a game that I wanted to retire at halftime of, it was, probably Minnesota 2014.
Oh, that was a miserable
game. What about the Rose Bowl?
The Rose Bowl's close, but also like at least you're in the Rose Bowl playing and you're ranked. I'm
freezing your balls off.
Right. We got beat equally as bad, if not worse, by Minnesota. And it's not like they were a good team either. They didn't have Christian McCaffrey. And we got the brakes beat off of us on a cold, slightly wet day in Minneapolis. And it was one of the most miserable things we went through in our 5 years. Were you guys there?
I was there.
Okay, Kevin was there. Drake,
for one, was miserable. Yeah.
Nope, Drake. I skirted by on that one.
Nice. Okay, you got out on
this
that one.
That is an incredible development. I would love to find out if that guy ever plays college football ever again.
I would imagine, dude, this guy was a 4-star recruit with offers from you name it. Georgia, Clemson.
What Bama. Year is he?
I believe he was class of 2018.
Because the dude looks about 27.
Yes, he does. Man
he also looks like a fat fuck.
He kind of looks a little beefy. He's been taking advantage of training table, and now he's gonna have to find a job because he has three kids and a girlfriend to support. Okay. Finally, before we move on to a little bit of football talk, we're gonna read some more reviews.
Oh, let's go.
So this one was inspired by the last time we read one. We're going to read the good one first, and then we're going to go back to the bad one because I like to finish on the shitty stuff. You know that feeling when you get when you're at a grocery store and an old lady calls you handsome young man? Well, that's how it feels to listen to the Washed Up Walk-Ons. Best Hawkeye football insight out there with three former players who are funny, entertaining, and never fail to brighten my day just a little. Not to mention the best intro music out there. Puts a tear in my eye and a tingle in my pants.
Hey, that last couple words, not necessary.
Hey, and if you know what, if the Wash Up Walk-Ons is a little,
listen, if anything has to do with the Wash Up Walk-Ons, the last sentence is the most important.
Yeah, it's the tingle in your pants for sure. Not everybody enjoys it that much though. This was all the way back in 2019 when we weren't even mentioning reviews or talking about it. One star, average pod. Kevin Ward is easily the best part of this podcast. Kid knows his stuff. Good football mind and overall smart person. I like Tyler, but he isn't as smart as Ward. True. He's easily my second favorite, and I'll take 2 out of 3. Hey, I'll take 2 out of 3. Drake's rant on Nebraska was solid, but after that, he pretty much can be tuned out. If you are looking for X's and O's, this isn't the podcast for you, which is strange considering they are all former players. If Kevin Ward was on this podcast more, it could easily be a solid 4.5 to 5 star. But alas, he is not.
Yeah, but that podcast was from two full years ago.
Yeah, that's true. That's not a recent review. But it was
like, can I get some acknowledgement by holding this podcast back by, only showing up half the time? I feel like if I showed up all the time, expectations just be too high,
Right.
You got to keep the bar low.
Sometimes, yes, you have to.
Kevin, you do actually raise the bar a little too much in a lot of situations.
Right.
And a lot of times the other folks following you just can't quite reach that bar. So
right.
Yeah, if you just continue to be mediocre, that would actually be okay.
Not only is that a true statement, but it was echoed from several people. And Kevin, I'll let you say what you need to about the situation. But as we all know, Drake did not show up to the podcast that we did on Sunday, and he apologized for that.
You guys are welcome.
Yeah,
he apologized. I'm third best on the show. You guys are welcome.
He apologized for that on the Patreon episode extensively. And then several people, even though Kevin was on his phone, it was Highway Kevin, several people for the first time in a while, this was the most we've had of this response, said, wow, this was a really good breakdown of what actually happened in the football game. And it was a great analysis by Tyler and Kevin. And then just so happens, it was the first one in a while that Drake was not on.
Listen, man, I'm happy to sleep through more podcasts and just, show up to the Patreon.
It's a 3-man game here. 3-man game. We are going to talk a little bit about what happened. A little bit specifically the run game. You know what? In fact, because this is a professional podcast, we're going to do that in a second because we got those freaking ad things. So skip ahead now.
This is not a professional podcast because I'm laying in bed eating spicy almonds.
All right, let's pick it back up. And Drake, you said in the episode we did, the extra, you said that you were fading into irrelevancy for the podcast because of the lack of offense that the Hawks have shown through their first 4 games. I don't know if that's true. I don't think that people come to this pod when they think of the Wash Up Walk-Ons. Again, they think of the tingle in their pants, and you give them that tingle in your pants, not because in their pants and potentially in your pants. I don't know. Because of your stories, your audacity, your sometimes over the topness, we could call it
authenticity.
I don't know if the first thing on people's list is, damn, I really come to this podcast because Drake gives me the X's and O's of that offense. But I want to know, the running game took a step back a little bit.
Yeah, man.
And the passing game seemed to take a step forward. And if you look at the game before that, the run game, we had 250 yards. Goodson went for 150 and three tutties. So I think this is more of a thing about putting it all together. And we're going to play Maryland at night on a short week on the Big Ten reopener. You'll hear Dylan, who I talked with earlier, talk about the personnel in Maryland in a little bit, but he said that their strength of their defense, when we're talking about the offense getting stuff going for the Hawks, their strength of their defense is their DBs. And their defense, it's not like their defense is an Iowa level defense either. This makes me think, well, maybe this is a game where we can get that run game going on a nice little Big Ten opener. Not only that, middle linebacker got dinged up against Kent State last weekend and has not practiced all week. So I think that this is, a good chance, but what has to happen here? The offensive line, is it just them figuring it out? They just have to take the next step to dominating the guy across from them.
No, because that's not the way they block on the offensive line. It's a cohesion thing. Like you guys remember when we played teams like Wisconsin and guys would just be running free in pass protection because the communication wasn't right.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were standing guys up, the count was wrong. The guys weren't blocked, you know, they weren't sliding to the side correctly, yada, yada.
Right.
That just is like what's happening in our run game, where it might not be that they're not going to the right guys, but when the guard and tackle are working from, you know, three technique to up or whatever the scheme is, mm-hmm. whatever run play we're running, maybe one guy pops off too soon, the guard doesn't catch up, the guy slips into the backfield, running back has to make a cut in the backfield. And we are always taught in the running back room, if you have to make a cut behind the line of scrimmage, it's like a kind of a dead play anyways. And now it's just, you do your best to make up for the dead play, because running back should not be having to make their cut before the line of scrimmage, because that means the offensive line is getting beat. So like, it doesn't matter what scheme you're running, but we're not running a man scheme where it's just like, I got this guy, you got this guy. Iowa's offensive line is always working through people to the next level, because that's kind of like a professional way to block things up. And we play our offensive line in a very professional manner. So I don't know. That's my analysis.
So this for you is a communication thing more so than it is
cohesion, man. Like they can even block it, right? Like they can be saying deuce, deuce, and they can work a deuce, right? Or they can say Trey and the tackle and tight end know that they, you know, whatever. But if they know what they're supposed to do and still they don't execute it properly, or they're too early, or you know what I'm saying.
So it's just that intangible flow of chemistry.
There's the machine that, you know, the oil in the machine.
Okay.
Is.
Do you think that should be the, or is the most obvious thing to lag behind with a young offensive line like this?
Well, I think it's the most obvious thing to lag behind when they're trying to play 8 or 9 offensive linemen within the first 4 games. So like, you know what a starting offensive line, it's a fraternity. It's a 5-man fraternity.
Yeah.
That is like, it's that group.
They're a squad.
It's not supposed to be like a wide receiver core. It's not supposed to be like a running back by committee unit.
It's okay. So here's my, So here's my question. Do you think, and this is partially because of Shooter's situation, which really I'm hoping, I don't know where he's at, how bad the injury was, how the recovery's been doing. I imagine he's doing his best to get back to that game shape as quickly as he can, that full game shape, because he is a starter when he's game ready conditioned. Him and Lindy are starters. And I think Mason Richmond is pretty, he's been solid enough to lock down that left tackle spot. Ince is left guard. Britt has been in there. Connor Colby's been in there. And then we've got DeJong on the right tackle, which may be the biggest weakness of the five. Do you think that if they just picked a five, or if they were able to just stick with a five and go, that they would elevate their level of play quicker than if they were just using whoever's the healthiest that week or the most?
Personally, I think that it, and Kevin could maybe argue this if, because I'm no genius, but personally, I think that if you just put five out there that all know how to work together and have been working together and get the snaps together and are just in the fire together all the time, it just, I think it just works better, man.
Okay.
I'd agree with that. And obviously you can only play with who's healthy. So, you know, the, you know, shooter situation or whoever else might be banged up that week, there's nothing much you can do about that. If they're really just don't know who their five guys is at this point,
that's sort of a problem.
That's a problem for sure. For sure. And I would agree with Drake. If you have five and just go with it, that group will improve faster than you rotating in eight or nine guys.
Right.
You're going to get more improvement out of the group of five than you would out of the eight or nine. Okay. Now I'd say the one exception for that is if you have a lot of veteran guys. So like you're subbing in like some extra juniors and seniors, guys who've been around, guys that know their positions, guys that have played with each other a lot. But that's not the case here.
Yeah. Yeah. Like because that the because we're young. We're younger and inexperienced. Interesting answer. And I think a lot of the people will appreciate that. Now they might be coming for the tingle and the X's and O's after that, Drake. I don't know. What are you drinking? Kombucha? What is that?
Yeah, man. Trying to do anything I can to help my gut out.
Jesus. You really changed. Okay. One more question then. And it was, I have to remember my question now. Oh, we saw the long ball and we saw Keegan Johnson, young guy, do some good things. We saw Nico catch a long ball. I know that as a specialist, the only cool things I was involved in were trick plays, fakes. And I know that KF had a very, very, intense eye for how those worked in practice, right? If we did a fake, Kevin knows. If we did, no, but you both know. If we had a punt fake in and it didn't work against an unknowing scout team in practice, fat chance that thing was making the final book for the game.
0% chance. And if it didn't look crisp on Friday walkthrough, 0% chance is getting called. Had to look great five times the entire week.
Yep.
If you went four for five, not getting called.
If the play is designed for Drake Kulik, 0% chance is getting called. Because that son of a bitch was in the game plan for like 18 cocksucking weeks when I was the guy catching the ball. And then the one week that it was Amani Hooker, well, he got tackled when he shouldn't have.
Yeah.
He had a first down, though, I think, right?
Yeah, but it should have been a touchdown.
Yeah.
Where I'm going with this is there's some qualifications during the week where we got to be able to see this thing work against a scout team who probably isn't even going to play it as well as the opposing defense on Saturday will. And KF needs that. He needed it, right? Polecat, I remember the first time we practiced that thing, I was like, Colton, this has to work. Because if you mess this up, it's all over. And it worked. And we brought it to the game eventually. Is it the same sort of thing? I know that it's a little bit different with offensive plays, Drake. But is it the same sort of thing where, and KF mentioned this in his presser yesterday, he needs to see some long balls be completed on the offensive side. He needs to see Spencer take a chance. And then he's more willing to kind of work those into the game plan. He's more willing to take those shots. I know it's not him taking the shots, but is Brian more willing to use these plays that the Hawkeye Nation wants to see out of Spencer if it's happening in practice? Or does he just rely on, I know he can make the, we didn't see it in practice this week, but I know he can make that throw. So we're still going to call the play.
I don't know, man. Yeah. Yes. If so, like if the quarterback is just playing really well on a Saturday, the whole playbook's open.
Okay.
Like if your quarterback's balling, your quarterback's balling.
Yeah.
But at Iowa, it's probably better that you have a good week if you're trying to run something. Like shot plays are different because shot plays are drawn up to beat each defense.
Situational.
And like there's situations where coach expects that they're going to run this coverage and we know how to beat it, or that, you know, on third and four, they suck up heavy to the play action and they play this defensive behind it. So this is how we're going to beat it. Like, those plays are in the game situational because they're better than any other call we have, regardless of how that's gone the whole week.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like if the receivers aren't getting open or if the quarterback's just throwing duds, like the coaches don't have that much faith in that part of the offense going into that week. Like you guys know how it is. You got to practice well to play well.
So I think when he said they had their best offensive practice earlier in the weeks, I think that some of those bombs, some of those long passes were part of that. And I think that may have catalyzed into those plays being called. And then subsequently Keegan Johnson having his coming out party and freaking balling.
True. I don't know if catalyzed is a word, but if it is, give this podcast an award.
Catalyzed is a word.
Here's the other thing is the coaches don't decide where the ball gets thrown all the time.
It's true.
There's very rarely is there just a one or two man route where they're just going deep and I don't care, Spencer, you're throwing it 40 yards down the field and something's happening. Usually that's the quarterback's first or second read. And if it's not there, you're just checking down to something. But let's just say this. There's receivers out there running go routes that don't get thrown, and that's not on the coaches for them not getting thrown.
Right. And I think, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, but I think I don't know how it couldn't be a confidence booster for Spencer to see those balls. I mean, those were some pretty passes, right? He threw a couple dimes and
his first touchdown was a dime
just in the bread basket. That's gotta feel good. And that's going to instill some confidence. I have to think that that lets him relax a little bit and say, you know what? Maybe I'll take a chance. Maybe I will throw this ball, because we do have receivers open downfield sometimes. And sometimes he, and again, and then it all comes back to protection, and this is all puzzle piece together. If he has that time to get to those progressions and see it downfield, and he clearly has the ability to make the throw. So,
right. And this is for all the fans out there is like, this guy was wide open. Why didn't he throw it to him? Quarterbacks have what's called a read progression. You're going to start out, you're going to kind of try to read the defense before the ball is snapped. Ball
got to know where your safeties are at. Always exactly. Got to look at your safeties.
Yeah, if you got one high safeties, two high safeties, if he looks like man-to-man, cover three, cover eight, cover two, I don't know, one of them. You get the snap, you're immediately looking at your first read. You should be able to diagnose the coverage from there.
Yeah.
Based off what your first read is doing. So say you're running a smash route. Smash route is the outside guy runs a hitch, inside guy runs a corner. The quarterback's reading.
And what coverage does that beat, Kevin? Tell them what coverage that beats.
That beats cover two. It beats a lot of coverages, man.
Yep.
So say they're running cover two. You're reading the corner. If the corner sinks underneath the corner route, I should say, you throw the ball to the hitch.
Yep.
If he doesn't, you throw the ball to the corner. Now, sometimes there's blown coverage on the other side of the field. Guess what? That was probably his third or fourth read. So if that guy's running wide open, he's never even going to look at it.
Right. And when you're in the stands, this is where we're going with this. When you're in the stands,
100 feet above the field, it's really easy to see that guy.
Holy shit, those receivers are open.
You're the quarterback.
That's why the offensive coordinators.
If you're the quarterback in the – yeah, exactly. The coordinators see it. They'll come back to it and say, hey, Spencer, they blew this last time. Maybe want to look over there next time. But if you're the quarterback in the pocket behind 6'5", 300-pound dudes blocking four 6'5", 300-pound dudes.
And you only have the ability to look to the right, or like, you know, you can't see
right
that same.
So that's why quarterbacks have progressions. You go 1, 2, 3.
Dude,
if you make it to your fourth or fifth read, congratulations, your offensive line's amazing.
And now that we're going through this, even though I know all of this, dude, it's so hard to be a quarterback. Oh, it's God. So hard. It's,
yeah. So one, yeah, yeah, like you said, you have to be able to diagnose the coverage to a fairly certain degree before the ball is snapped. That's right. Why you'll see a bunch of pre-snap motion became really popular.
Because it tells you who's guarding who.
It can. It can. It
potentially
can help diagnose if they're playing zone, man, what type of zone they're playing, to within a relative degree of certainty. And then at the snap, you have literally a half second to be sure on what coverage it is. And then from there, you know, find the open man, make the throw. You know, just making the throw is not easy. Like you go,
oh, yeah,
guys play 7-on-7. It's like some of these throws are pretty hard to make, you know?
I mean, Hawkeye fans, just be glad that none of us three were back at quarterback, because that would have been a bad deal.
I mean, think about how big a football field is. A 10-yard out route to the other side of the field is like a 40-yard throw.
Yeah, it's not easy. It's not easy.
Yeah.
So just a little perspective there. Maryland. I'm going to talk a little bit about Maryland, okay? Drake, you mentioned that you don't know shit about them. I don't know if it's worth us really guessing or just, you know, projecting what we may think happen. Essentially, what they got is a quarterback who can throw it around. It's Tua's brother. They're scoring 37 points a game. They're putting up 520 yards per game. And as me and Kevin mentioned on Sunday's episode, or I guess Monday's episode, they spread it around to a lot of guys. Five receivers have 12 or more catches, and that's a lot. They have athletes, and they haven't played great competition, but they have a similar opponent and handled them sort of like we handled them, arguably maybe better. So they also haven't seen a defense like ours. And Jack Campbell had 18 tackles last week. He tackled everybody in Kinnick Stadium last week and got like National Defensive Player of the Week, which he deserves.
We've had a couple National Defensive Player of the Weeks.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know if this game is so much about Maryland. And oftentimes it's not about your opponent. It's just about you. And that's what we would be preached to a lot when we were on the inside was, if we just play our best game, how many times did we hear KF say, hey, if we play our game, okay, if we fucking do the things that we got to do, all right, this game will work out in our favor, but we got to go do it. All right. We got to be humming. People love the KF. It's not even that good. It used to be so much better when Kevin and I talked like that for 2 months straight.
We can't overuse it, man. We, you know, in situations, I like it in funny situations.
Man. Yeah.
You don't have to redo the man's game speeches.
No, I mean, it's like it, if this line figures it out, they get some of that congruency. The defense continues to play like they play. The long snapper gets the snaps up a little bit, lets Torrey unleash the cannon. Spencer makes a couple throws. It's the same story. If we can get the run game to just be good and Spencer can make three or four throws during the game and our defense plays like they play, we win the ball game. Because I know that those receivers and that offense probably hasn't seen a pass rush like our defensive line has provided the last few games. And they definitely haven't seen a back seven like we have. So I don't know. Any thoughts?
I think the key for the defense is going to be contain Tua Jr. Make him uncomfortable, make him make tough throws.
Someone did say we should put Epinesa's brother in and see if we could have a little more. For those that didn't know, Epi is the one who took Tua out, broke his ribs 2 weeks ago. And his brother's on the Hawks right now. So maybe we put him in. He does the same thing to Talia.
Well, yeah, from what I've seen from him, he's good at making the easy throws. So just make him tough throws.
There you go. And I think our defensive line guys, it's been a little pleasant surprise. Valk, all those boys, they're going to put pressure on them.
Yeah. No, I mean, they're playing great in the run game, and the past couple of games, the pressure has gotten way up. It's if we get pressure for this game, I think the Hawks defense is in for another sub 14.
There's going to be some interception opportunities in this game because they like to throw it around. 13 sacks from that defensive line through four games. That's on pace to be way above average for the Hawks, especially in their good seasons. Before we go to the second break, I'm going to reshare the screen because this was supposed to be something that I shared earlier. This was a comment on one of our Facebook posts on our CSU recap. This guy right here says, "What's up, fellas? Shout out from this is Kyle Guard. What's up, fellas? Shout out from Montana. I fight wildfires for the U.S. Forest Service, which means I'm out in remote wilderness for 2 weeks at a time, then 2 days home, rinse, repeat till the snow flies and the fires die. It's not easy to be a diehard Hawk here, but I find my ways. Often I have to hike to the ridgetops to get service, download my Wash Up Walk-Ons podcast, and set my YouTube TV DVR to record the game so I can listen to your podcast and watch the game in my sleeping bag under the Northern Rockies night sky. Have yet to miss a game or an episode this year, despite the 16-hour work days and 1,200 hours of overtime I've put in since April. Keep up the good content, hashtag Hawks by a million." And this is this man. What a goddamn legend.
Kyle Guard, you are an American legend.
Are you kidding me?
That is absolutely legendary status.
Kyle Guard is the exact type of man we're looking for on the Washed Up Walk-Ons podcast.
Unbelievable. I mean, that is...
Just fighting forest fires for 2 weeks at a time.
16-hour days? Are you shitting me? I'm not that tough. I'm a pussy.
Not even close.
Dude, it's another day for him. He's popping in the Washed Up Walk-Ons podcast and going out and fighting forest fires.
Unbelievable.
We got to put out some more content for him.
Some content.
Dude, he's got to make some content for us. I'd love to have him on the podcast. He's probably got a hell of a story.
So we might have old Kyle Guard on to talk about that.
Those guys are called smoke jumpers, right?
I don't know if...
Enter the black, baby.
Yeah, I mean, that's entering the black, and we could get into that. When we come back, it's your favorite segment, Ward's Winners. We'll be back in a second. And we are back with my guy, Dylan Spilko, top deputy editor of the Testudo Times and a Maryland senior.
Yes, I am a senior. Very glad to be here, Tyler. Thanks for having me on. Very excited to share some insight.
Yeah, this is probably something that doesn't happen very often for you or really for Maryland football being 4-0 in general. Obviously, this matchup has gotten a little bit more attention over the past week because neither team has lost, which is something that Maryland has only done three times in the last decade. So it's not like it just happens out there on the East Coast for you guys. Is the excitement on campus, is it palpable? Can you feel a little bit more excitement for the football team? I know I played, and in 2014, when we came out there, it was not a full stadium. It wasn't a great day for football either, but I feel like there's maybe a little bit more something to this team. Is that the same feeling that you guys feel out there?
You know, the fan turnout since I've been here, it's been kind of iffy. It's not like the basketball crowd. It's not right. Like a packed Xfinity Center with the Maryland basketball program. But I mean, football is getting better. The fans are starting to roll in more, and you could start to tell that there's a lot more hype surrounding the program now. And obviously 4-0 for the first time since 2016, first time in 5 years that Maryland has also swept the non-conference slate. So, I mean, there's obviously more hype around it. There's a lot more going on social media. There's a lot more interaction, and rightfully so. I mean, Maryland's gotten off to just a great start overall, and they're starting to really change their culture. Head coach Mike Locksley is really changing this program around ever since coming in 2019. Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's definitely a lot more excitement, and it's going to be a packed crowd on Friday night. And Locksley did say something during the media about another Friday night game for Maryland, because Maryland also played Illinois on Friday night. Mm. So it's going to be a great matchup, and I'm sure there's going to be a huge turnout.
I think there will be. I think hopefully the the number five in front of Iowa's name draws sort of a bigger crowd. I know even if a home team isn't the best, sometimes those away opponents can draw a bigger crowd. And I think that Maryland is potentially on their way to drawing a number right by their name as well. If they were to win this game, if the Terps could pull this one off, they would no doubt enter the rankings at 5-0 with a top five win versus Iowa. I think the assumption, and you can tell me if I'm wrong or not, is that this team has a chance to compete with Penn State or Michigan or Ohio State this year. Obviously some questions to be answered because the opponents haven't been the best so far for really either team, especially now that Iowa State is not looking as great as they were maybe sought out to be. But is that sort of the feeling, is that there's a chance they could win some games that they normally wouldn't?
You know, I think the feeling is that the 4-0, first time since 2016, there's a lot of hype around the program. But I think the thing that's really changed about the team is that it used to be, you know, 2019, I believe they went 3-9, and then last year they went 2 out of 5 games. So not much really to build on off of that, just by looking at it from a record standpoint. So, and I think the real difference is that Maryland this year, they're taking care of the games that they're expected to win. Sure. And that's something that's not really been like a common thing throughout the years of Maryland football. And it's, you know, sometimes teams are just expected to win. Like Maryland was expected to beat Kent State. They were 2 touchdown favorites. And, you know, going into that game, you're thinking, oh, is this the game where they finally fall off that mountain? But, you know, they come away with the 21-point victory. And
they came through.
Right. And it's the Big Ten East, obviously, so talented with all these 4-0 teams, Penn State, Michigan, and Michigan State out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Ranked as well. They're also – Maryland's going to be facing them on the road later in the year. So many talented teams. But do I think that they can compete? Yeah. I mean – without a doubt, they're going to give – they're not a walkover anymore. And it's because of what they've been able to build on defense and on the offensive side of the ball. And it's just – there's just a different feeling now that you're able – now that they're 4-0 and they were able to come away with 4 consecutive wins.
Yeah.
There's definitely just a different vibe around Maryland football.
You mentioned the previous Friday night game, and that was one that they barely came away with the win. And that was the Big Ten, one Big Ten game they've played against Illinois, who looked good against Nebraska in their opener, but now maybe they're a little bit up in the air. Who knows if they're any good or not? Is that cause for concern? Is that maybe the one game that Maryland fans are looking at right now? Like, I don't know. Like, what was it about Illinois in that game that held Maryland back from the result that they've seen in the other three games?
Yeah, so a big part about that was Talia Tagovailoa. He's, I'm sure we'll get to him soon enough, but he obviously had a fantastic year. But that was his first true Big Ten road game with fans.
Okay.
And a lot of people don't know that. So he had, obviously, you're dealing with the crowd noise, you're dealing with the environment in general. And I was watching that Illinois game when they played Virginia. I don't know if it was the opening week, but they played him early in the season. And I mean, their defense was just getting shredded early on, but then they adjusted. But and Maryland really just struggled. They didn't really struggle to move the ball against Illinois and come out with the win in that one. But they didn't really what really like helped them in the first two games of the season and even against Kent State, they were able to really connect on those big plays. But against Illinois, they weren't really able to have that one big play that kind of separated them. Yeah,
the spark plug.
Right. And it just kept Illinois in the game the whole time, which made it. And at one point, it seemed Illinois was going to win. There was almost like the score was 17-10. Illinois completed like a 3rd and 12. And all of a sudden you're like, okay, here's the Maryland loss that derails the season.
Right.
But they showed a ton of resiliency in that game. And there was a play at the end where Illinois had the ball on. They had like a 2nd and 25 or something with under a minute to go. They called a timeout. And I couldn't believe it because Maryland still had a couple timeouts. And it just saved more time for Maryland. And then the Terps get the ball back, drive down the field, 32 game-winning field goal for our senior kicker, Joseph Petrino. But overall, it was a hard-fought game, and it was one of those where you didn't really expect them to come away with a win with how they played through the first 90% of the game.
And I think they turned it over a couple times as well, right?
Yes. They had, I think, 2 fumbles from their backs in that game. I know running back Teon Fleet-Davis had a red zone fumble at some point, but overall it was just a really sloppy game from a Maryland standpoint. It was nothing that we saw in the first two games when they beat West Virginia and then crushed Howard. Mm-hmm. But it was just important for them to come away with the win, and that's what they did.
The offense, as you mentioned, has kind of been the feature with Tua's brother. I just call him Tua's brother. How do you say it? Talia.
Yep.
So that's the tongue twister. Mm-hmm. He is, I don't know if he's Tua, but through first four games, he's obviously been kind of the name brand guy for them. And they've been able to spread it to a ton of different receiving targets. I don't know if there's a team in the country that has as many guys. I mean, I think I looked and there's five guys with 13 or more receptions or something like that. It's a little bit crazy.
Yeah, they have a ton of receivers. I mean, the top two guys that Talia is throwing to, you have Dante Demas Jr., who Michael Locksley likes to call Mr. Consistent.
Okay.
I mean, he's such a great wide receiver. He's so dominant, and he's, you know, three out of four games this season, he's had 100-plus yards, and he's number one in the Big Ten in receiving yards per game.
Wow.
He's really just improved what he's been able to do. He's taken so many steps forward. He's also got three receiving touchdowns. He's an elite level talent. And
is he a take the top off guy, or is he more of a quick, great at route running kind of guy?
Right. So that's where Maryland's offense becomes so dangerous, is because Rakim Jarrett is the guy that is more of the break, but you know, the speed guy, the guy that can really beat you over the top. And that duo, their opponents that Maryland has faced they've not really been able to solve that kind of duo. Mm-hmm. Because Rakim Jarrett, he's easily the fastest guy in the wide receiver group. He is just unbelievably fast. I mean, he's averaging more yards per game than Chris Olave I found out today. So, I mean, he's quietly being one of the best number two guys in the wide receiver group in the Big Ten and in the nation. I mean, he's just a phenomenal player. And just them two combined, I mean, they carry this offense just as a whole. And they've been basically perfect so far to start the season.
Yeah, that's dangerous. And looking at the opponents that you played so far, it makes sense. It's tough for a secondary to have the kind of talent to go up against individual guys like that on the edge. If there was a team to have that, it might be the Iowa Hawkeyes. Indiana, really good secondary as well. But between Indiana and Iowa, you're looking at two of the best secondaries in the Big Ten, potentially the country. And really defensively just as a whole has been Iowa's thing the first four games. I have to imagine that's Maryland's biggest concern as we roll into this matchup, that they feel great about their offense. Iowa feels great about their defense, but now each team is about to play someone who could potentially poke holes in what they've done in the first four games. Is that sort of the story here?
Yeah, I think it's going to be just a clash of like two Goliaths. You know, I don't want to call Maryland offense a Goliath quite yet, but they're playing fairly well.
Right.
And I think the real difference maker for Maryland is going to be how those third and fourth receivers step up in the running game. Teon Fleet-Davis, he's been a really big factor in the run game so far this year. Mm-hmm. And then the receiving game, you have guys like Jayshon Jones and Brian Cobbs and Daryl Jones that are all they all get their fair share of plays in. And they spread Talia spreads the ball around. Last game, I believe 12 or 11 different guys caught a pass against Kent State. So it's really just a plethora of weapons for him to use. And then even the tight ends, Maryland's been featuring, two tight ends. It's Chigozie Okonkwo and Corey Dyches. And they've been kind of a smaller 1-2 punch. But in 2020, Maryland's tight ends didn't make any kind of impact at all. So anything from them is good for the offense as a whole.
You may have the hardest job over there at Maryland with all those names. I mean, what is going on with these guys? Can't get like a Bob Smith out there, you know? The defense for Maryland, I think it's probably not quite tested yet at this point. And if there was one strength of that defense for those Hawkeye fans listening, our offense hasn't been the best, right? We've struggled to get certain parts of our offense going in multiple games this year. Where is the strength of the Maryland defense, if there is one?
I think it's without a doubt in the secondary. The two guys that you need to look out for, Nick Cross and Tar Heap Still. I mean, they are both phenomenal game changers in the secondary. They've really been solid for the Terps all year. Nick Cross, he's got four pass breakups, two interceptions already. He leads the team in tackles. And then Tar Heap Still, He, as a freshman, I think he led the nation in pass breakups per game. He had two last year. Wow. You averaged two per game. So, I mean, the secondary is where is Maryland's defensive bread and butter. So yeah. if you're going to beat them through the air, you're going to have to get through Cross and Tarheeb Still. And Maryland's secondary, I don't want to say they got torched against Kent State because they only gave up 16 points, but they gave up over 300 yards passing.
Yeah.
And Dustin Crum had a solid game, but
he's a good quarterback.
Right.
It's a common opponent between the two of us, which is, it's interesting to look at. And maybe that's a good thing that the secondary is their strength, because Iowa right now, our biggest thing is we're trying to find the running game. We're trying to get that started. So if we can against maybe a average to maybe above average, defensive line and second level against Maryland, and then it could get interesting. But I think it's going to be an incredible game. Dylan, thank you so much for joining me and giving us a little bit of enemy reconnaissance on the Terrapins. And I imagine you're going to be at the game covering it as well.
Yes, I will definitely be there. I'll be in what is called Ticer Tower at Capital One Field. It's a perfect view from above and couldn't ask for more. Can't wait to see the pack crowd there. So it's going to be an awesome game. It's going to be a really fun one.
I hope it's a great environment. A ton of Hawkeye fans are coming out there, and it should be a good little matchup. Dylan, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tyler.
DJ
Kevin.
This isn't fun anymore.
All I do is win, 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 no matter what.
Football doesn't even make sense anymore, dude.
We're back. It's Ward's Winners. At this point,
0-3 this week.
Motion to change the name of the segment and to change the intro, because it's not fun when you're not winning.
Motion denied.
Drake, can I get that seconded?
If I get a gavel, if I had a gavel.
Motion denied.
Motion denied. There we go. this is.
Boys, we had a couple good weeks, and now we just didn't have that good of a week.
So I'm going to correct myself. Someone actually corrected me. UCLA ended up scoring late and beating Stanford by more than 4.5. So I was actually 2-1 last week.
Oh, you fucking do.
Yeah. So
way to hold us together.
Notre Dame and UCLA pulled through. Michigan State evidently wanted to play it close with the Frosties, and 2-1. Kevin was 1-2. Drake 0-3. That's 3-6. It was really 3-5 on the pod. Not great, but we don't quit. There's no quitting around here.
No, of course not. I just threw in a 15 team parlay. You think I'm quitting? Oh, no. I'm swinging for the fences, motherfucker.
All right. Well,
that is what we're here for, baby. Yeah. Hold them pistols high and bang, 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 bang.
Yeah. Kevin's got
a mile long.
Kevin's got a CVS receipt of a betting slip there with him. And it's Thursday, which means the walk-ons have more picks. And so we're going to give them to you, Kevin.
I don't think there's anyone telling anything we're saying out anymore.
No.
Maybe Beef's pick. I don't know.
No, the books are actually, the sports books are actually listening in on this. They're like, all right, who are they taking? We're going to sweeten that deal up even more, because we know they're not hitting.
Yeah, I don't know how Sportsbook hasn't sponsored us yet, man.
Seriously, we're making them a shitload of money. Anyway, what do we got?
Do I have to?
Yeah, you have to. The fans want to know.
All right, I texted y'all this one on Sunday night. As soon as I saw the line, I like Ole Miss plus 14.5 versus Bama. I told myself anything over 2 touchdowns, I'm riding a hottie toddy Rebels.
I'm taking that one as well, because that feels like a slam dunk.
Yep. They're coming off a bye week. Their offense and Matt Corral is as good as advertised. And their defense has made so far an incredible improvement over the last 2 years, where they were just giving up scores left and right. But I like Ole Miss to cover the 2 touchdowns plus the hook. Next one. Staring me dead in the face. I put it on the cards. Don't like it very much. But Michigan versus Wisconsin.
Oh, man.
The under is at 43.5. that is a low under, and I'm still taking it. I don't know. You had two good defenses and two very average offenses. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's not a whole lot of leeway there. Like, it's either going to be for sure an under, or it's not even going to be close. But, yeah, give me the under in that game. And then I also got the under in the Minnesota-Purdue game. Both coming off pretty poor offensive performances. And I think Purdue's quarterback might be out this game.
Well, their running back's also out still. So that's big yikes. But also Minnesota lost to Bowling Green. So who knows, right? Who knows?
Yeah, and Purdue's defense has looked solid. They didn't have a great game versus Notre Dame, but that's about it.
Yeah. All right. Those are the three. What's the confidence level there? At this point, not very high.
I actually like two of them. I like the Mississippi pick, and I like the Minnesota under, and then the Wisconsin under. Yeah.
I always like my picks. I'm not doing horrible.
See, man, when you go, I don't know what I am, maybe a couple games under 500, you start losing confidence in yourself.
You're 5-7, and so is Drake.
Yeah.
And I am 6-5-1. So somehow the guy who makes the least bets out of everything.
No, I don't make any bets. I don't really do much sports betting. I just pick them.
How can you ask the people to tell you if you're not making the bets?
Here's what I'm going to do this week.
I always said that I just make my picks. This has been since the beginning of the podcast. This is your segment, and I just make some picks.
Here's my picks. Take an Iowa -3. I feel good about the Hawks.
Ooh, where you get -3 at? It's 3.5, I heard.
Everywhere right now, it says -3 on here. Other than FanDuel is 3.5, but DraftKings is -3. Caesars is -3. MGM is -3. So it's been bet down.
All right.
Though I do think it could be... I might be asking for a Caleb Shudak field goal to break a tie and win the game at the end. I don't know. I'm taking Iowa -3. Indiana, Penn State. I think they both can score points. Indiana hasn't been great at winning games, but they have scored some points in the last few weeks. They are playing Penn State. Good defense. Penn State loves to score that thing. Over under currently sitting at 53.5. Taking the over on that. And then I thought about spiting Iowa State and taking Kansas +33. I thought about it. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to take Notre Dame to cover 1.5 against Cincinnati.
I think they're getting 1.5.
They're getting 1.5. I want them to cover the +1.5.
Gotcha.
I think they'll win that game. I don't think Notre Dame is great.
Cincinnati coming off a bye week.
I don't necessarily think Cincinnati's great. And Notre Dame is riding off some confidence with a nice win over Wisconsin. I'll take Notre Dame to cover I'm not going to take a money line, but I do think they'll win that game straight up. Drake, we went over our picks in the extra, but what are your three for today? Because there weren't many that you were like dead set on.
Yeah, I definitely like the Ole Miss pick.
Other than that one.
And then I would have bet on the Hawks, or I would have put the Hawks in, but you put them in, so I'll leave that one off.
Okay.
I'm going to give you two picks from the NFL and why. I'll take the Chargers -3 at home against the Raiders. And that's just because it looks like the Chargers might be one of the strongest teams in the NFL. And the Lions in the NFL haven't been as low as like you would typically see. I don't think like 7 points in the NFL is a lot. And you see a lot of lines at 7, 8, etc. And if you can get the best team in the world, potentially only having 3 to cover 3 points.
Neiman in the Chargers, best team in the world.
I don't know, man. They could be. they just beat the Bucks, and the Bucks are defending champs that were undefeated the Chiefs. Before that.
They beat the Chiefs.
But still, we get it. They're good. They're a top five. They're a top five team, I think.
And that was the other team I was going to pick potentially was you can get the Rams at -4 at home against the Cardinals, and the Cardinals are a good team.
I like that pick.
I kind of just like it because it's less points than most other teams have to try and cover.
So you're back in L.A. this week, the city.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the L.A. teams are playing the best ball right now. And I don't really love the fact – I would almost like to take the Titans to cover 7 against New York, because the Jets, because they don't even look like they can score. But I'll leave it at the two L.A. teams.
Imagine if
when are the Jets going to get demoted to the XFL?
They're going to bring in the St. Louis Battlehawks and drop the Jets down.
When was the last time the Jets had a winning season?
Oh God!
I think the Jaguars are on the worst losing streak.
The Jaguars went to the AFC Championship sometime within the last decade.
Blake Bortles, service.
Yeah, they won like 11 games or something, maybe 12.
Yeah, but like, tell me the last time the Jets.
Yeah, were I'm looking it up right
decent.
Now.
Decent, not good, just decent.
10-6 in 2015.
No, they were not. Really?
Yeah. Let me double check that here. Win loss regular season 2015. They were 10-6. Other than that, they were 8-8 in 2013 and 2011. Yeah, they actually went 11-5 in 2010. But since 2015, it's been 5-11, 5-11, 4-12, 7-9, 2-14. It's not good.
No, it's not.
All right. Well, little less wind in this segment right now until we get.
Yeah. Steam. Those are the picks. Go ahead and fade them and make $1 million.
It is what it is.
It's an 18 parlaying for you right there. Just fade them all.
If you're still sticking around, we appreciate you being here. We appreciate everything you do for us. Continuing to listen. Kyle Gard is an absolute legend. I still can't get over that.
I think that's the main takeaway from this podcast.
Yeah, that man is someone give that guy a trophy.
That man is, as the kids would say, built different.
Yeah, he's built different, huh? Put him on a Wheaties box. That's it. Iowa. In fact, by the time you're listening to this, tomorrow.
Wait, how do y'all feel about the Friday night games? For college,
I'm all for it.
It's a money grab, but
of course it is.
But I don't mind Friday. Friday's fine,
dude. Friday night lights, man.
You know what it is? As a player, you then get that Saturday off day. Probably, like, because Sunday they're going to come in, and so I mean, you at least get the weekend, right? You get Saturday, Sunday.
Either that or KF's putting extra practice in on Sunday and you're watching film on Saturday.
Jeez.
I think it gives a huge advantage to the home team, though, because they don't have to have the travel day.
Yes, but Iowa, the way we switch things with Thursday being the off day, it doesn't hurt as much as opposed to when we had Monday as our off day and then lose Thursday as a whole practice.
Correct.
So for Iowa, they're built as good as they can be for a Friday game. We'll see week 5. We're hoping that it's 5-0 when we come to you on Monday. We'll talk then. Hawks by a million.